There are 24 hours in a day. One third of the day is spent in bed. Now why not be in the most comfortable you can get? Layla mattresses are more than just a foam mattress. They are copper infused and flippable. That's right, flippable. If you like a harder mattress, use one side. If you like a softer mattress, flip it over and voila. And the great thing about Layla is getting to try it out for 120 nights. That's right, 4 months. And if you decide that you don't like the mattress, Layla will pick up the cost of shipping it back and give you a full refund. Layla also offers bamboo sheets, weighted blankets, and memory foam pillows. And if you act soon, you can take advantage of their spring sale. $150 off a mattress and 2 free pillows. That's a $300 value. Plus, they are offering $30 to $50 off accessories. If you would like to take advantage of this great deal, simply follow the link in the show notes to let them know we sent you and to help support the show. Layla Sleep, thoughtfully designed for the most cool, clean, comfortable sleep imaginable. Hey there, welcome to another edition of Everyone Has a Story. I'm your host, Nate Wade, coming to you as always from the great state of Idaho. We are going through our first phase of opening the state back up. A lot of people are happy. A lot of people are still complaining. You know, you can't make everybody happy. Somebody's going to be mad depending on what side of the fence you are. And that's all the politics I'm going to talk about today. We've got Mika Gobig on the show today. You're going to love her talk. It's a great talk. Very encouraging, very inspiring. You're going to totally love it. But first, let's do the part of the show that I introduced a couple of weeks ago, the three things that are making me happy this week. And I'm going to talk about the first one. I watched Inception again for the first time in probably, well, since the last time it came out, which I guess is what, 10 years ago, something like that. Crazy show. A mind F-U-C-K of a show, if you will, and it just totally boggles your mind. But I do have a question. I mean, you get to the end and you sit there and you wonder, was he still in a dream or was he awake? I mean, you look at the things, okay, the top looks like it's about ready to stop spinning when they pan to that top. But then, if you look at the kids, they're the exact same kids, in the exact same position, the exact same age as all the time he keeps on seeing his kids throughout the show. So ask yourself this question, was he in a dream? Because it's in the same house. He's in the same house that he used to live in before he took off. Do they still have that house? I thought his kids were living with his grandparents. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. What do you guys think? Let me know on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter, KNATRADIO. That's my handle, KNATRADIO. Find me on Gmail if you want. You can email me at knateradio@gmail.com. Those kind of places. Also find me on Facebook at Everybody's Got a Story. Don't ask me why I named it Everybody's Got a Story and not Everybody Has a Story. I don't want to even talk about it. It's a long story, and I'm not going to talk about it because this is everyone else has a story except for me, right? I don't know. Anyway, okay, number two thing that's making me happy this week, the United States government has finally said, yes, there are such things as UFOs, and we have video to show that we don't even know what in the heck they are. Did you see this? I mean, look, our whole world has been totally ran by pandemic news, and this just kind of slips under the radar. This is a big deal. The United States government is saying there are UFOs. We don't know what they are, and here we are not even talking about it. It's just kind of a blip on the radar. A blip on the radar. That was good, I thought. Okay. Anyway, so they go on. These Navy fighters are up in the air. They see something crazy. They don't know what's going on, and so they release these. Well, I'll tell you why they released his videos, because this dude from Blink-182, he made him release the videos because he couldn't deny him, because somehow he got a hold of them, and so the government was forced to release them. But anyways, the videos show these identified flying objects that rapidly move back and forth, and the way they move, it's not plausible for modern planes that we have or any type of ship to move that way. So they don't know what it was. I mean, maybe it is some sort of Russian experiment. Who knows? Look, the Cold War is over, but the Cold War is still there. So it's a Russian experiment. That's all I'm going to say. Maybe it's a Chinese experiment. I don't know. But the Navy previously acknowledged that these videos existed, but now they actually showed the videos. Now, for years, they've said, look, we don't have a program talking about UFOs, and we don't know if they actually exist or not, but we don't have a program. We don't do anything to actually – now they're saying they have formal guidelines for how their pilots are supposed to report if they believe they've seen possible UFOs. So they actually do have some sort of program now. And it's just amazing to me. They're just like, oh, for decades they said that they don't have any kind of program, and now they're saying, oh, yeah, by the way, we have a program that looks at UFOs. So my friends – UFOs exist. Whether they're not they're terrestrial or extraterrestrial, we don't know. But UFOs exist. I'm telling you what, 2020 is – this is Armageddon. Maybe this is Armageddon. I don't know. I'd like to go back to 2019. It was a lot simpler time, don't you think? I don't know. Anyways, how do you like my green screen? It's going on right now, right? I'm trying to figure it out. So if you notice, my hat is actually showing the numbers, probably because, I don't know, it's gray. Why is it showing the numbers, right? I mean, it's supposed to be a green screen, not a gray screen. But so I'm kind of transparent in certain ways. My hat's sort of floating there, but the rest of me looks okay, I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out the green screen. Give me a break, boys and girls. I'm just starting on this video thing and I'm trying to figure it out. And here is YouTube trying to help me along. I don't know. Do you watch it on YouTube? Let me know. Again, K-Nate Radio, Twitter, you can do it. Or leave a message under the YouTube video. I'd love to see it. It'd be great. Correspond with me. I don't have anybody that corresponds with me. It makes me sad inside. You know what I'm saying? I want friends. I just want friends. All right, enough of that. Okay, the third thing that's making me happy this week, even though it took a lot of work yesterday, I am doing some more work on my backyard. I am now making – I have a fire pit out there, and so I cut up all the sod around the fire pit, and I'm going to lay some gravel and make kind of a patio, I guess you could say, around the fire pit. And then I've got an aquarium that I think I told you guys about a long time ago that my son built in the backyard. Really cool aquarium. Maybe I'll put some pictures up on Twitter about it. And so I'm going to make a pathway that goes to the aquarium, and then I'm going to make like a sitting area around the aquarium as well. So it's a lot of work, and I'm old, and I'm hurting. I feel like I got hit by a Mack truck, as my mom always said. But it was fun. Got some of it done. Got a lot of work left to do, so we're just going to go to town and make the backyard look a lot better this summer. And come on over. Have some marshmallows. We'll fire up the fire pit and we'll cook some marshmallows, make some s'mores, whatever you want. Come on over. Love to have you guys. Love to have you guys. I promise. I'm not joking. Do I look like I'm joking? I'm not joking. All right. Mika Gobig on the show today. You're going to love her interview, and we will get right to her interview right after these messages featuring some great podcasts on the Indie Blast Podcast Network.
The Untold Story. Blood on the Wall. The Bloody Knife. Broken Glass. The Missing Body. The Missing Piece Podcast. Cast.
Learned with a phone one here, otherwise known as Charles, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. But I also host a podcast called Nerd with a Phone Podcast, and the number one question any podcaster gets, what is your podcast about? Well, I cover entertainment, news, music, video games, television, comic books, and other hobbies. We say get nerdified. What does it mean? It means we get happy. All right. Check out Nerd with a Phone Podcast on IndieBlastNetwork.com. Also, check out Everyone Has a Story and the other great podcast here on the Indie Blast Network. Thank you.
I'm originally from bad kissing in Germany, which is bad kissing is how it's spelled.
Okay.
Well, I guess we all had enough of that when we were young. No, it's actually bad stands for spa town. And so it was like, it's pretty much the cozy, quaint country town you may think of. It might be beautiful. And that was in the 70s.
Okay.
And it was relatively close to Eastern Germany. So I grew up in the West, but relatively close to the border.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was very much into Eastern European history. So he was a lawyer by profession, government lawyer, but that was his hobby. And Eastern European history was his hobby. So we spent, I saw a lot of stuff that other people my generation didn't see because everybody else was going to Italy and Spain and we were going to Poland and Russia, the USSR, and trips like that. And I felt like it was so unfair back then. But of course, now I'm glad I had these experiences.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this question. Since you guys grew up in the West and you decided to go, check out these, at that point, Eastern Bloc countries, did you have a hard time getting into them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, kids, teenagers, you're pretty self-absorbed at this point. And I was blessed with basically growing up having a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to these countries, I found it mainly, first off, I found it mainly a nuisance because it was like, oh man, I mean, look at that. There's newspaper cut out to be used as TP. And it was very strange. It, when you travel nowadays, sometimes you come to countries and they feel like your country 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But as a kid or a teenager, you don't have the 20 years of experience to say, oh yeah, that's how, but in retrospect, that's how I see it.
Okay. Gotcha. I mean,
they were relatively poor. For my parents, of course, who had grown up in post-Second World War Germany, wasn't that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only
right.
The spoiled kid of the 70s, totally different thing.
Right. Sure. Sure. So you grew up then in Germany and you went to the German equivalent of high school, I guess. I don't know what you call it in Germany. And did you go to college, to university over there or what?
Yeah. I went to boarding school, which is a little more traumatic, a little more traumatic experience than most movies show it. but fortunately only for a few years and, back to my small town for high school. And then I went to college and grad school in Munich.
Hmm.
Back then the German system, didn't have a bachelor and a master's yet. So you had to decide beforehand if you were going for a master's. Now it's like very much more like the American system that you may be familiar with. But back then it wasn't. And so I got my master's in literature, communication and history in Munich.
Wow. Wow. So you got literature, communication and history. So basically it was like three majors
in the United States,
or how did it work?
We had one major, two minors. That was the requirement back then.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. And so when did you graduate from university then?
That was in, 96.
Oh, okay.
Half of your listeners weren't even born yet, I bet.
I was born. Wow. So, and then did you move straight over to the States or how did you end up in the United States?
Actually, that was the first time I did move to the United States.
Okay.
Because I had realized at this point that I was a little less of an academic than I had aspired to be.
Mm-hmm.
So my grades were good and I did my research and everything, but I realized at that point, I wasn't giving up on the PhD idea yet, but I had realized that I'm more of a people person.
Mm-hmm.
Than an archive person or book person. I love literature and history and a lot of things, but I love people more.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And so what I did was, it was actually pretty crazy. I had an argument with my boyfriend at the time about going forward because he was 2 years older or something, so he was working already. And I was graduating and I thought like, okay, this is when you discuss the next step. And we had an argument over the next step, and I was furious. And like 2 days after this argument, where I realized there was nothing moving in the direction I had planned at this point, my aunt and I were leaving for Chicago to visit her friends. I knew them. I've known them for a long time. She lived in Chicago for like 7 years in the 60s. So those were close family friends. And I had never been to Chicago. I was excited, but I was still furious. And I channeled that anger into, you don't want to move in with me? I don't even want to live on the same continent as you.
I've just got this. Extreme. That's extreme.
Yes. But what it made me do is actually walk into the German embassy in Chicago, ask for the cultural attaché who one of my aunt's friends had met. So it wasn't like a total blind call. And ask her for a job.
Oh, so you started working at the embassy?
No. She asked me what I had done. She actually asked me in, and we sat there for about an hour and discussed options. And by the time we were done, she's like, I think you should either work for a newspaper or teach college.
Oh.
And so by the time we were done with our coffee date, I guess, she had rounded up like 2 internships for me and a couple of other people to talk to.
Okay, go ahead. What happened?
Well, the internships were all unpaid. There were interesting things like the Goethe Institute, which is our national cultural institution abroad, but they were all unpaid. And I felt like my dad was so generous to pay. College is free in Germany, but of course, there's still a lot of costs. And my dad covered them all. So I did work as a student, but I didn't. It was more like for my spending money. He paid my rent and everything. So I didn't want to give him another opportunity to spend a lot of money on me. Like 3 months in Chicago for an unpaid internship, that would have been very, very expensive.
Yeah, for sure. So what did you end up doing?
I took a college teaching position in Maryville, Missouri.
Oh, okay. So you went from Illinois to Missouri, and Maryville, I'm assuming, is probably kind of a small area or what? I mean, it doesn't sound like a very big town.
Yeah, no, it's a small town, and they have Northwest Missouri State University. So the connection came because the cultural attaché, she had met the German teacher there at the college, and she thought, oh, maybe she needs a teaching assistant. And when because she was very industrious with building her program, and when I called her, she's like, oh, no, actually, I need a replacement for a year because I'm finishing my PhD.
Oh, so you jumped into that.
Yeah. And she was like, can you do that? And I'm like, sure.
Why not? Okay. Heck yeah. How did it go for you?
I tend to say yes first and then pee my pants later.
That's okay. It probably opens up a lot of doors for you to say yes. I mean, most of us have the tendency to say no, as opposed to yes. So, but it went well or not?
It went super well. Yeah, I actually ended up staying 2 years because she didn't come back. I made a couple of friends for life, I am today married to my boyfriend from back then.
Oh. Okay.
Which was a little more complicated than that sounds. It was not a straight story. But
All right. Do you want to share anything about that or not?
I can.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
So I went back to Germany after 2 years, and I always had this, I'll go back to the States. I like that person. I was there or I had developed into, I like the clean slate.
Yeah.
It had given me, and I really felt strongly about going back to the U.S. But I mean, I was 28, and we thought we could keep our relationship going. But well, how things happen, life happens.
Yeah, right.
And there was a lot of life happening, so that was basically first of all the end of it. And then fast forward, almost 15 years later. So we are approaching 2012 now.
Oh, wow.
And we had been, my husband and I, we had been loosely in touch on social media at that point. But he was married. I was in a committed relationship. So it was just like only like a bit of touching base every once in a while. Sure. Same with other friends back then.
Yeah.
And then a dear friend of all of us passed away in January 2013. And I absolutely wanted to come for the memorial service. Mm-hmm. I knew I couldn't make it to like the actual service that week, of course, but I'm like, okay, memorial service in spring, I'll be there. And he was an older professor with health issues even back then in the 90s. So still it was a big shock for the community he had built.
Yeah.
Around his house and his personality.
Right.
And there were people coming really from all over for the memorial service.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend from Spain and I, we were the ones with the furthest trip, but people came from all over the US.
Mm.
And so we were there for this beautiful memorial service. And who was there also was my ex-boyfriend at that point, not from Kansas City anymore, but from Seattle, Washington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd been out there for a long time. And well, and then life happened again. I changed my travel plans. I realized he had been divorced for a while. Mm-hmm. It was just, I never realized that. I mean, it's not necessarily what people put out on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, sure. Didn't. Yeah. Yeah. Unless you want drama, then you put it out.
Yes, yes. But so in this case, I hadn't even
right.
thought about it. We met again and realized that, yeah, we've been the ones that got away. And then it went pretty quickly from there.
And so how long have you been married then?
Since late 2013.
Okay. So, yeah. And everything's going great. Fantastic. Fun. Yeah. Fun time being married?
Mostly, yeah. I mean, there's always some work in it, right? But no,
I hear you.
It's definitely not a decision I regret. I'm very, very happy that life gave us that second chance.
Yeah, and, for sure. That's interesting. Wow. So then I'm assuming you moved to Seattle after that?
Yeah.
Then, you just got married?
Yeah.
And so you've been in Seattle ever since?
Yeah, since 2013.
How do you like Seattle?
It took me a long time. Now I love it.
Really? Why was it?
Well, it's beautiful, so that's not an issue.
Yeah.
So today we have that, when I look at today, we have the kind of weather people think we have all the time.
Yeah.
It's drizzling.
Yeah.
Seattle drizzle. I always call it the passive aggressive drizzle because you step outside and you don't even realize it's raining.
Right.
And you walk for a block and you're all wet. But no, it's beautiful. And I live relatively close by the water and it's beautiful with the mountains in the background. What was difficult for me in the beginning was it's a very different place from any place I had lived before.
Right.
I had spent the last 10 years before I moved to Seattle in Frankfurt.
Oh, okay.
And Seattle is a very new city. Seattle is about the age as the house I grew up in.
Oh, really?
Something like 150 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
the house that was 150 years old?
My parents.
That's not imaginable for people. I mean, those of us who grew up in the West, I'm in Idaho, so I'm not too incredibly far away from you. But I mean, our state is just over 100 years old, and the house I'm in right now is maybe 50 years old. It's not.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, that's not a new house, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's an old house around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 150 years old. Wow. So the newness of the city was kind of different for you then?
Yeah. And I mean, Frankfurt is the... Berlin, they do have a bit of a skyline, but it's still very different.
Yeah.
And a lot of high rises, not skyscrapers, but high rises in Europe are projects. They are not the cool places to live.
Oh,
they are the government substituted places to live, for instance. So it's not cool to be in a high rise.
Right. And so you move to the Emerald City and all of these high rises are really nice and mostly businesses and condominiums and things like that that are in
right.
those Wow.
So it took me a while. Like also that I live in an apartment that has a number and not my name on a doorbell.
Really?
We don't have that. And it's like, I'm suddenly like, you know, for me, it felt like being in a hotel.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. Interesting.
Wow. And there was a little gym on the ground floor, and you could drop your laundry off and they would just get it to the laundromat and back for you. So on the one hand, it was nice.
Yeah.
But it's like, this is like living in a hotel that feels very impersonal.
There's probably a lot of cities in the United States, I think, probably feel a little impersonal, quite honestly. So when you got to Seattle then, did you continue to teach, or what happened as far as your professional career is concerned?
So at that point, I had built a business around teaching English, translation, writing copy, because I realized not many people are actually good writer, bilingual writers. It's relatively rare.
Sure.
So I had built kind of like a small agency, which became a bit of a boutique agency for the German car industry.
Oh, really?
So I had worked with suppliers, and I had primarily worked with a car manufacturer. Hmm. And they are, Germans are very loyal employees. And especially with those companies that are considered cool.
Yeah.
And of course, yeah, if you work for Porsche, BMW, Mercedes, Audi, they are cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So they have a very low staff turnover. So I had really good business because people, once they got to know me, they never left the company. So that was relatively easy to shift this business over. So I quit the teaching that I had done in Germany, but I still had the translation and the writing copy. And at that point, I had already done my coaching training. Basically, I started with the teaching groups and moved on to one-on-ones, started to work with executives, prepping them for their speeches or their one-on-ones with analysts. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got into coaching training.
Okay.
So that's how I arrived here.
Gotcha. So when you, I'm noticing from your bio sheet though, you say you do coaching, but you do it what you call German style, which you know, is efficient, pragmatic, and solution driven. So explain a little bit, like, what would you think would be the difference between maybe a German style coaching and maybe something we do here normally in the United States?
You know, I think it took me a couple of years to get back into coaching here because I felt like the cultural differences are too big. Mm-hmm. But now I'm actually, yeah, as you say, I'm running with this, hey, this is coaching German style.
Yeah.
Because I think there is a relatively large group of people who is open to having a more direct approach.
Sure.
So I come from a culture that is much more dissent forward, I guess.
Okay.
And a lot, I think that that's one of the big, big cultural differences. There's a lot more negativity in Germany. Mm-hmm. I don't want to judge it too much as good or bad. It's
sure.
On the one hand, people complain a lot and are maybe more pessimistic than here. Hmm. But on the other hand, they have an easier time sitting with hard feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's a very different approach. I love the optimism here, mm-hmm. and especially in a tech city like Seattle.
Right, right. So do you find people a lot more open than you thought they would be to this kind of pragmatic approach that you have towards coaching?
I think there are a lot, especially in the tech industries or scientists, because they are relatively direct in what they, how they think and what they do. Mm-hmm. And so for them, that works, that I'm not wasting their time. There are definitely people I would probably not want to work with and who wouldn't want to work with me because they need a lot more pampering.
Mm. Okay.
Or cheerleading.
I would think there's a lot of people in the United States that need a lot of pampering, but
and that's okay because for them there's a large range of coaches out there too, which have a different approach to how they work with people. So there's someone out there for everybody.
Certainly. Oh, And I think your approach would probably be fairly refreshing, I would think, to a lot of people, because there tends to be a little bit of, maybe too much, I guess, pomp and circumstance surrounding coaching sometimes and things like that, that if you kind of cut through that kind of fluff and get to the basics, I think a lot of people really kind of appreciate that.
Yeah, I think so too, because I don't have a hard time calling people out mm-hmm. on certain things. Like I have no problem at all to just listen to something saying, what I'm hearing are actually excuses. Those are not reasons. Those are excuses.
Yeah. And people are they caught off guard, or they're like, oh, well, maybe you're right.
Usually there's this, moment.
Yeah.
Of course, I have the same thing when someone tells me, that's right. not a reason, that's an excuse. I have the same moment of like, not everybody then agrees, right? Sometimes, but that's okay too.
Right. So you say you have a series, it's called Unlearn. That's the name of the series, it's Unlearn series, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you say that it comprises of four main topics, which is an imposter syndrome, the inner critic, and self-talk, perfectionism, and self-sabotage. Talk a little bit about that, and what kind of things do you bring out in that series?
So for me, I did my coaching training back in Germany mm-hmm. With the first female executive coach Germany had, and I learned a lot. But a lot of things back then I ignored because they weren't relevant to me at that time, so they just flew by. And then I was surprised how hard maybe challenging. Let's call it challenging because it wasn't super hard. How challenging the experience was of becoming an immigrant to another country.
Mm-hmm.
Now in my 40s. And of course, I mean, hands down, as a white European with a master's degree, that's the easiest immigration to the US you can have.
Sure.
And with an American husband too.
Yeah,
so
right.
I'm not absolutely not complaining, but I was surprised about the personal ramifications, mm-hmm. how I saw myself, how I reinvented myself. And all of these topics came up for me.
Okay.
And I realized that opening up to a new life and committing to a new life meant that I, without forgetting who I was and where I came from, there were a lot of things I had to work through again. And unlearning became kind of the thing that turned out to be more important than learning.
Mm-hmm.
To redefine myself, like drop some stuff, drop some baggage.
Yeah.
Turned out to help me more at that point. And that's why I'm running with this Unlearn series, because lots of women I work with, mm-hmm. or lots of women I meet in talks afterwards with me when we chat a little, or clients of mine, those are amazing women.
Yeah. Yeah.
And especially the very young ones, man, first generation coding women. I mean, it's crazy. They don't have a lot of role models.
Yeah.
And they went to college. There were like four girls among 100 boys in their coding classes. That is hard.
Yeah, for sure.
And I can see the future leader in them.
Yeah. Well, then, so, you know, when you're talking about women, and they have, because of our society here in the United States especially, they tend to be their own worst critic. And mm-hmm. I think it's because, sometimes it's because of the pressure probably that we do put on women in our culture to be perfect in every way, whether it be, being a homemaker or having a professional career, and then juggling both of those together. And then when they fail some way, somehow, they tend to just cut themselves down. I know my wife does really, mm-hmm. really bad. And so yeah. How can, what's some advice that you can give to people, so they can stop being that critic, that inner critic that they're constantly hearing inside their head?
Yeah. So I think where we all need to start with that inner critic is accepting that we both have the good and the positive and the negative voice in us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not our enemy.
Yeah.
It is as unpleasant as it sounds, right? It can be really, you tell yourself things, and all of us do, that we would never say to anyone else.
That's the truth.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's horrible. And but I think the first learning here or unlearning is this is not my enemy. This is one part of me, but this is not like set in stone. This is not like a fact I get delivered. Mm-hmm. This is just one part of me. And that actually has good intentions. It's trying to protect me from messing up out there. Mm-hmm. That's where it comes from, right? It's trying to internalize the anticipated criticism.
Yeah.
And of course, it totally overdoes it. Totally overdoes it, of course, in the most horrible way sometimes. But just drawing the attention to it. And then there are a lot of different ways how to work on it. I personally prefer like saying, thank you, but I've got this.
Okay.
That is one I like. It's like, okay, I heard it, but I'm an adult now. I can do this.
Yeah.
Because that voice forms early, right? That voice is like a little child panicking.
Yeah, right.
And then the other thing, I cannot, we are connected. I'm connected here to my laptop. I cannot show you my bathroom mirror right now, but my bathroom mirror is full of affirmations. Okay. And, I can tell you here, like on my computer, I have the post-its. This one, says, I am cultivating high energy. That's this one on my bathroom mirror right now. It says, I stand up for myself and my clients. Mm-hmm. It can be anything, but it depends very much on where you identify.
Mm-hmm. You're a big believer in those positive affirmations.
I very much believe in those.
Yeah. And it helps to have reminders, like you said, post-it notes maybe on your mirrors or on your laptop or whatever if you're working at the office, maybe around your cubicle or things like that.
Or on the phone.
On the phone, yeah.
There are a couple of apps.
So when we're talking about that, though, so basically when you hear that inner voice, instead of maybe, hearing the negative aspect of it and then dwelling on that negativity, hear it and then say, okay, I can learn from what is being told inside my head.
Yeah.
And make it more of a positive thing.
Yeah, or at least just like say, okay, I'm taking a time out here. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm hearing. But the moment you can put your awareness there, it's much easier to distance yourself from the voice,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And then telling yourself, okay, my brain is going in overdrive again.
Yeah.
Or, my inner critic is telling me that again. Are you familiar with Brené Brown's work?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and she does that a lot, right? My mind is telling me that.
Right.
My brain is telling me the story that. And that is when you take the step back from the voice, and it's two. Mm-hmm. It's not, the voice is not you anymore. It's just a part of you. And that part is making a claim. And some claims might be okay to make and really reasonable, but a lot of them are not. And like my example is, I grew up with a family where pretty much everybody worked every day, mm-hmm, because they were entrepreneurs. And my father was a government lawyer, but he also had his fingers in politics. So everybody was always working.
Yeah.
And so when I spend a Sunday afternoon on my couch, I still get the, you're so lazy. You have this huge to-do list.
Right.
Don't be lazy. And that is a voice I want to ignore because it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Right. It's unhealthy.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, so, well, speaking of that, how can you quit these bad habits, whether it be thinking those thoughts or if we should think those, mm-hmm, stop thinking those thoughts, and then other things too, like, whether just some of the bad habits we have, whether it be laying on the couch too much, if that is a bad habit, I mean, it can be, or over drinking or smoking or things like that. How do we break those habits?
So, I'm a big believer in good habits and routines. Yeah. So what I'm doing this year, for instance, is I'm tackling one habit a month.
Oh, okay.
So I started in January with going to bed earlier, working on my sleep. No, I started with finally not drinking at all anymore. Oh. I had gone back and forth on that for a while. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that hard for me because I'd done years without drinking any alcohol and then going back and forth. And that was just my decision. It's like, okay, now I'm done. Mm-hmm. And then January was no alcohol. And yeah, that's what I've been doing since January. February was trying to work on an evening ritual. That was a little harder and that's still a little work in progress. March, I wanted to do no sugar, but then this thing happened and and so I decided I needed something easier. So what I did is I'm working on posture because I'm sitting on in my chair so much. I'm like, okay, I put a post-it on my second screen, posture. Like that's a good one, but it's not too hard.
Right.
But I focus on one thing a month and with the more difficult things. So as I said, I quit drinking totally. I quit smoking years ago. I definitely quit overspending too, like the retail therapy. Uh-huh. I've always found that my approach to quitting those things is that I first start with, what if it's easy?
Okay.
And I want to give as a caveat, I never considered myself in addiction territory. Mm-hmm. So that's the moment we're getting into medical fields and psychological fields, that's different. But for people who just feel like they have a bad habit, like eating too much processed food or eating, certain things, overdoing something, binging. What if it's easy? What if it's easy? And there's this Mark Twain thing, quitting is easy. I do it 20 times a day. Something like that. It's like not doing something cannot be that hard. That's where I came from. It's like, that can't be that hard, just not doing something.
So how, when you do this, you spend a whole month trying to basically get a better habit than what you had?
Yeah.
And is there like, do you have like a set, like a sheet like that shows, okay, I've made it to this point or this point or this point. Do you have like a checklist or anything like that?
I personally, but that's different again. I'm an all in or all out person.
Okay. Gotcha.
So that's how I start. Uh-huh. Like, moderation is not my approach.
Gotcha. Okay. That would go back to the efficient, pragmatic, and solution-driven that you talked about.
Yeah. I mean, moderation is a good thing for many people, but it's just like it doesn't work for me. So
that's fair.
I go, right, I'm all in. And then I'm like, okay, today's the day I'm going all out. And then I basically, let's take the alcohol or the overdrinking. That's a good example that many people know without feeling like I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not a person who needs a 12-step program. But I see there's an issue. Mm-hmm. And then what about if it's easy? That's the first question. And then I journal into that. Okay, imagine it's easy.
Okay.
I mean, I personally, there are a couple of juices I really like. And when I go to the bar, there's, for instance, a very nice barkeeper I know at a place my husband likes to go with his friends. And he's been sober for many, many years. And when I said, oh, I quit drinking alcohol, he started making me those nice NA cocktails, like cranberry juice based. And he always puts them in nice glasses. And I'm like, see, that's neat. That's fine.
So you still kind of get the feeling of being at the in the bar, but you don't have to deal with the alcohol.
And there are so many of those little things that in our panic that it will be hard don't occur to us. And then I also rephrase the goal. Like I don't write on my bathroom mirror with the goals. Mm-hmm. I don't write, I'll quit drinking. Mm-hmm. I write gift goals. So in this case, it was, I am giving myself the gift of mental clarity to build an amazing business.
There you go.
And I'm like, who wouldn't want that? I mean, wow. So there's like every time I'm like, no, I know that I've I've had enough long times of not drinking any alcohol that I know that even a glass or two takes my energy down the next day. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't want this. I don't have the time to waste. I have good things to do.
Wow. Well, I like your approach. I do think I like the more efficient, pragmatic approach, just because to me, I feel like it's refreshing and you kind of just, let's stop beating around the bush and get straight to the facts of the matter. Now you're a coach, you're a speaker, and you're an author. Now, do you have some books available that people can purchase?
Right now I don't, but I'm working on it. So people, if they follow me on Instagram or something, they will be the first to know.
Very good.
The author right now, I have a lot of stuff written, but working on that. I had a couple of novels in Germany.
Okay.
Yeah.
Published novels?
Yeah. One was actually with Random House.
Okay.
In German. That was a long time ago. It feels like a different life, but it's kind of a neat thing.
Sure.
That
is it
most
still available
people,
at all?
I think it is as an ebook. Okay. I think they
well,
still have.
For those of my e-book. Listeners who speak German, check out her books in German. I'm a good friend of a professor at University of Utah, and he's fluent in multiple languages, so he might actually check out your book. Who knows?
I think it's a very pink book, so maybe. You're okay. But I do what I do right now. I still write a lot, but I put out blog posts for a while. I had actually two or three blogs that don't exist anymore, but I love writing. But okay. I focused on making videos because that was a challenge.
Okay.
So I wanted to give myself a challenge, and so I'm starting to do more video, either on YouTube, the more formal ones, okay. Or the more just be brave and do it on Insta stories. That's what
I'll tell you what, we will make sure we link to all that kind of stuff in the show notes, just so people can get in touch with you and watch your videos and again, follow you on Instagram, and just in case when you're ready to publish your book, people will know about it. Now, I'm assuming you said you're a speaker as well. Now, I have a feeling that that's probably kind of came to a grinding halt for a little bit here. But do you speak around the country? Is it mostly local there in the Seattle area? Or where do you speak?
Well, the engagements I've had so far were locally, and I was just at the point where I had stepped out of my local comfort zone, and then everything was canceled. So, I mean, I don't want to complain because I'm low risk. I'm actually in a good place, but sure. The first two or three weeks where I saw how this was headed, I was throwing myself a big pity party. So that's one of the things I have started to really love, the online workshops. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, it's interesting as people are getting more and more into it. In the beginning, there was zero engagement. People would just come and listen. Mm-hmm. And now people have been home long enough that they say, okay, this is a workshop.
Yeah.
I can interact with a speaker. Maybe if it's a big one, there's a moderator. So I am hopeful that either when the situation takes longer, that there will be more online conferences to go to again, or just companies will invest in their people, giving them a chance to learn while they're working from home.
Yeah. Well, I wish you nothing but the best as far as that's concerned. Hopefully this doesn't last too much longer. I'm hoping we're on the downward side of this whole crazy mess that has really turned our whole world upside down. It's just been fascinating. I am one of the quote-unquote essential employees. I work in the produce industry, so I have, my routine has not changed. I get up every day and do the same thing that I've always done. But my wife, she's working from home. She does accounting, so she's able to work from home. But it's been really interesting. My kids, their school's been canceled for the rest of the year.
Right.
My son is ecstatic about that. My daughter is sad about that. So I guess it's what they like.
Very stereotypical.
It is. It is very much so. Well, Mika, I have totally enjoyed speaking with you today, and I wish you nothing but the best. And we will make
Thank
sure
you.
We put all of those, you know, any way that you would like people to interact with you, I'll make sure we put those in the show notes, and we'll promote this video and this podcast as much as we possibly can. Truly, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a wonderful conversation.
there you have it, Mika Gobic on the show this week. A truly inspiring story. If you want to find out a little bit more about her and the stuff that she offers, you can find some links to all of her social stuff in the show notes. Make sure you check that out. Make sure you check out the affiliates that have helped make sure this podcast goes. We do get a little feedback from that. So if you click and you purchase something, just know that some of that money that you spend is going to go to help this podcast continue to exist. And we truly appreciate your support. You can also find Patreon page. We do have that. Find some awesome swag at threadless.com. If you like Everyone Has a Story, we've got some great swag right there. And look, this podcast does not exist unless we have people like you that are willing to share your story. So if you want to be on this podcast, please get a hold of me. You can reach out to me on various social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those links will be in the show notes, and we'd love to have you on the show. This is Nate Wade. Until next week, saying, look, everybody's unique. Everybody has a story. What's yours? Have a great week, y'all.
Indie Blast Podcast Network.